You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello there. You're listening to Opus Talks Renewable Fuels. I'm Jordan Godwin, Director of Renewable Fuels Pricing and News here at Opus, a Dow Jones company. With me today is Advanced Biofuels Canada President Fred Gatala, who will be speaking at the upcoming second annual Opus Canadian Carbon and Biofuels Forum in lovely Vancouver in May. In today's episode, we'll get you all caught up on the latest around Canadian biofuels. Fred, thank you so much for coming back to this podcast. We had you a year ago and you were fantastic. You're already in the Opus Podcast Hall of Fame. So welcome back. How are you doing, man?
Two-time participant and I'm in the Hall of Fame. Okay, I think that sets the bar a little bit low, but it's always good to hang out with you, Jordan, and the Opus crew. I'm glad you're coming back to Vancouver, Canada, to do the second annual conference. I know excitement is growing for it. We're glad that there's some focus on Canada. There's always been focus on Canada from where I sit, but it's good to have Opus doing a conference there. There's a lot going on up here.
Everyone's just so friendly. Every time I reach out to, you know, any of our growing number of Canadian friends in this space, people are always very receptive and happy to share information. Fred, we've got some pretty big amendments coming up that the Government of Canada is looking to make around the clean fuel regulations. Can you walk us through a little bit about some of the biggest objectives they're trying to achieve here?
Yeah, it's a really big deal. The focus on renewable fuels and the focus on setting up the sector to persist, survive, thrive, transition from survival mode to growth mode is a focus of the federal and provincial governments. So on September 5th, the Prime Minister announced that there would be a time-bound biofuel production incentive, CFR, Clean Fuel Regulations Targeted Amendments, and a renewed Canadian strategy that involves the federal government, provincial governments, and territorial governments to put in place a more robust, longer-term vision for how this strategic sector contributes to Canada's energy security, economic viability, emission reduction. So all of those things are in scope, and it's amazing with what the Prime Minister said within one paragraph, basically, looked at the immediate term, which is the BPI, the production incentive, the near term, which are the target amendments, and then the long-term growth of the sector. So I am very bullish on Canada because of that focus, because biofuels are, at the end of the day, a policy-driven business, especially on the renewables and diesel side. When you combine them together, pricing does take over. I mean, ethanol's use in the gasoline pool is in part because it is such a useful source of low-carbon, low-cost octane. But biofuels are driven by policy. It's good to have the CFR in the focus of policy, and the targeted amendments are case in point of that. So I'll keep going a bit on what the government is actually consulting on, because I think this is very relevant to many of your members that follow biofuels, which is all of them if you're listening to this podcast. The Environment and Climate Change Canada, ECCC, for the people who use acronyms, which is all of us, is basically consulting on two key amendments to the clean fuel regulations. One are considering a minimum domestic content requirement, which would require a portion of the fuels that are used for compliance under the CFR to be produced in Canada. The second option, and there may be a combination of options, is a credit bonus for fuels produced in Canada. And all of this is because of 45Z. This is all because of the August 2022 Inflation Reduction Act that adds an exportable production tax credit that was not in the market before. So this is a direct threat to the viability of our sector. Everyone saw Q4 production rates on the biomass-based diesel side turn down because of the transition from a BTC to a PTC, a production tax credit, which is the 45Z. So we're not doing this in Canada because one day we woke up and said we needed to do this. Wouldn't this be fun to go through a multi-year regulatory process to do this? No, this is 45Z, and it's important that it be understood that way, because 45Z is a very different beast than the BTC. So this is what's going on. We recognize that trade is an essential part of the North American biofuels energy landscape. And so what this is really trying to do, the long-term game here, is to make sure that the CFR sticks around, because in order for it to stick around, you need to have a domestic sector that is producing renewable fuels that are used under that program. So that's the general gist of what ECCC is doing.
Said. I wanted to ask, you know, what's been the response from your members, the, you know, domestic biofuels producers in Canada, to some of these initiatives, including some of the, you know, Made in Canada initiatives that have been rolled out over the past year? Are people, you know, fired up, or is this enough incentive and, you know, long-term signaling to really incentivize growth, or is more needed?
It's a very mixed bag. Generally, it is positive that we are in focus and being discussed at the Prime Minister's office and the senior levels of government. So that is very good. It's good to be at the table for these discussions. The approaches that can be taken to respond to 45Z and the responses to those approaches are varied. Some of the best comments we've gotten from our membership, and I'll just pause to say that our membership includes pure play biofuel producers in Canada that are, you know, smaller scale producers, all the way through to US-based producers that supply the Canadian market on both the biodiesel side, the biomass-based diesel side, or renewable diesel, or HVO for your European listeners, as well as large US ethanol producers and US ethanol exporters. What combines all of our viewpoints, or the commonality through all of our views, is that we think that the CFR is a pretty good policy design. It's leading to increased renewable fuel use in the Canadian marketplace, and it has many of the key elements that would comprise renewable and clean fuel policy that could spread to other countries, both in the OECD and non-OECD. So the structure of the CFR is very good, and that's not just because we spent 6 years trying to develop it, plus the couple of years it's been in place. We like the one we've got. So the CFR enduring is going to be tied to what decisions are made on these amendments. So we've had members say, and I love this one, which is, do what needs to be done to keep the CFR in place for the long term. And what keeps it in place for the long term, to not be repetitive, is domestic production able to access the CFR market and not be outcompeted by incentivized imports. The agricultural sector needs to have a very clear view that this is a policy that benefits their sector. I mean, we're talking that adds dollars per bushel on the canola side and adds value to the rendering and other feedstock sectors. And it's got to reduce emissions. Of course, climate change continues to be real, and it needs to lead to increased investment. So do the thing that keeps the policy around. And the other key thing is, let's not raise prices at the pump. This is the thing that we all know is unfortunately a pretty big barometer of a policy success, is how much cost occurs at the pump. Because the thing about fuel prices is they are regressive. If you increase the prices at the pump, they hurt more the pocketbooks of households that have less income and are spending a greater proportion of their income on liquid or fuels or just energy for mobility. So if we can do all of those things, then we've got a policy that can go the distance, and we think they're asking the right questions on how they do that. Our view at ABFC is that the government should continue looking at both options, the minimum domestic content and a credit multiplier approach. The issue is that minimum domestic content is a very attractive option because it does hardwire in domestic participation in our domestic policy. It must be designed in a way that is not going to put obligated parties in challenging situations of where they do not have the ability to procure sufficient domestically produced fuels. it also has to ensure that the domestic consumer does not need to pay the full brunt of the opportunity cost for fuels that had previously been exported to higher netback markets. There's a way to design this that incorporates the amount of fuel that has been exported, that sets it below the amount of operating capacity that's currently in operation. There's a way to do it so it serves as a floor rather than an impossible trajectory for growth, because we don't think that minimum domestic content alone is a sufficient signal for new capacity investment. It's something that can de-risk capital to flow into a sector, but by itself, it's insufficient, which is why the credit multiplier would be important, because if there are 45Z receiving imports coming into the Canadian market, if you're able to counterbalance that with additional credit creation on the Canadian domestic producer side, you can balance dollars or cents per gallon with credits per cube, because we're metric, we use cubic meters as our compliance volume. There's a way to balance those. It's of course challenging, because if you're doing a credit multiplier, you've got the risk of deflating credit values because you're increasing the supply of credits. So care needs to be taken on that side as well. We're aware of other options in other policies that say do an automatic adjustment mechanism. Maybe there's a way of putting back in the debits at the 2030 timeframe. And then, of course, just increasing gradually, conservatively, the stringency of the overall regulation to make sure that there is a firm credit market, but not too high. And that's probably where you want to go to next, is what's going on in the CFR credit market.
It's definitely a delicate balance with these low carbon fuel standard type programs. We've seen that in California, where, you know, regulators try to find the happy medium between, you know, healthy credit prices that incentivize the growth of low carbon fuels and reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, but also isn't an issue with affordability. So it is kind of a tightrope to walk with some of these programs. I wanted to ask you, because we've seen surging credit values around the CFR credits, what's been the response from the market, and do you anticipate these credit prices holding for the near future?
So I'm glad we're talking about credit prices, because it's always a complicated discussion that involves different time periods. We've got in the CFR a system of credit true-ups. It's called a credit adjustment mechanism. No other LCFS type jurisdiction has this, where you are awarded the credits between the difference in CI from your temporary or provisional pathways through to your final approved carbon intensity pathways. So in the CFR, we have a couple of sections within the reg. The CFR heads will know this very well. Section 88, 89, and 90, which include some of those credit adjustment details. So basically, you can go back and receive the difference in credits from your temporary to your actual CI score using the July 2024 version of the model and true up those credit amounts. That is going to be happening at the end of June when those reports are due. Some of the credit adjustments have already happened in the previous year, but there are credits that are yet to be placed into the market, that will be placed into the market for the compliance period that we're in right now. So we could have tranches of credits being dropped into the market, which would reduce the credit price. So what you're seeing is, as you report high credit prices, is the high marginal credit price. This is not an average over a quarter or a year. This is if you want to go out into the market now and buy a CFR compliance credit, that's what it costs. And yes, recognize that is high, but that is not the cost of compliance over the entire regulation. This is buying candy after dark on Halloween or ordering all of your food takeout. This is the marginal cost, not your average cost. So that's not to belittle the issue, because very high credit values can make policymakers nervous about the overall cost of the regulation. we are recommending to government that let's see what happens in the credit adjustment reports to see how many credits come into the market. And to listeners that are in charge of submitting and having their CI scores approved by Environment and Climate Change Canada's CFR team, it's very important that you respond to their emails, you give them the information they need, because this is a reg that is maturing. This is a reg that the regulators are becoming more comfortable with. This is a regulation that the foreign suppliers, the registered creators, the verification community, the modelers are all becoming increasingly adept at doing CI scores and answering questions. So it's got some growing pains. So if you're in charge of getting your CI submitted and approved, we recommend that you continue working diligently to do that so that those credits that may go back to the beginning of the program in June 2022 are actually available to the marketplace. So we could see the credit values go down in response to strong credit adjustment reports. So we don't suggest pulling the fire alarm yet, but there, of course, are some flexibilities that could be considered. There's a range of flexibilities that could be considered to have some type of pressure release valve on costs. But we think no sudden moves is probably the best way forward until we know what the credit adjustment reports are going to do. And those are all due at the end of June. So take a break from the early part of your summer to be sure that you get those in on time and that they're accurate.
Absolutely. Well said. And, you know, in response to the CFR credit price increasing, we've seen the British Columbia LCFS price decrease as people are, I guess, taking advantage of those CFR values and not needing as much weight from the BCLCFS credit. Speaking of that program and other programs, what's going on at the provincial level? What are some of the biggest things you guys will be paying attention to in the coming year?
We like the interplay between Canadian provincial renewable fuel policy and federal policies. You reflected how the BCLCFS compliance credit value and the Canadian CFR kind of, they work together in some type of fashion. We've just got very different policies across the Canadian provinces, but we have policy across the Canadian policies. We've got policies in Ontario and Quebec that require 15% renewables in gasoline. And this is a big deal. And we point to this as an example of policy leading the fuel pool to incorporate more low carbon content and how that's an important thing that policy should do. And we certainly would like to see the E15 issue become part of the fuel supply year-round in the U.S. We know that's not the jurisdiction we pay attention to, but of course we pay attention to the U.S., but we would like to see that happen because more renewables decreases transportation emissions, and that's for the benefit of all. But to get back to your question, what's happening provincially? Part of what was announced on September 5th is a renewed federal, provincial, territorial renewable fuel focus. We're seeing a lot of activity on the provincial side to say, hey, we've got a federal CFR. There is an overall investment signal in this sector that reflects it being a priority sector for the Carney government. How do we design and potentially update our regulations so that we're able to capture some of those benefits? We're looking at the provinces of Alberta, Saskatchewan as clear opportunities where renewable fuel volumes can go up and regulations can be modernized. Neither of those policies have compliance credit trading markets. They don't necessarily have the carbon intensity based opportunities that other markets have, like both Ontario and Quebec have a CI type of system. British Columbia, clearly through their low carbon fuel standard, has the leading provincial policy design that is causing significant quantities of clean fuels to be used. So there's ability to modernize policies, get investments, and really take advantage of the bounty of agricultural feedstocks that Canada produces and the amount of petroleum resources we have that blend very well with low carbon content. One of the pieces that we like about our federal and provincial policy mix, especially the LCFS in BC and the CFR federally, is that they've maintained the volumetric requirements within their structure. So The CFR has a 5% renewables and gasoline requirement and 2% in diesel. We think those have room to go up to reflect the blend percentages in 2025. In 2024, we were about just under 10% renewables and gasoline and just under 8% renewables and diesel. We think those will be higher in 2025, and the minimum volumetric participation of clean fuels should be increased in the regulations. British Columbia also has the volumetric requirements. It's got them on gasoline at 5%, renewables and diesel at 8%, and jet fuel at 1% starting in 2028 and going to 3% in 2030. We think those, at least on the gasoline and diesel side, have room to go up on the jet side as well. Jordan, the reason why we like having volume signals in LCFS regulations, and the reason why we like having a science-based LCA, and the reason why we like having an approach to indirect land use change that is risk-based rather than quantitative like it is in U.S. LCFS jurisdictions, is because that ensures that there is always going to be a place for agricultural-derived liquid renewable fuels. We view that as very important. If you look at the CI reduction schedule in LCFS jurisdictions on the West Coast, not going to name states, at a certain point, liquid ag biofuels do not generate credits. You actually have credit generation limits on some specific feedstocks. We would like to keep our regulations CI based, using models that adhere to LCA principles under ISO, and do not put in place any type of credit generation limits, or do not eventually negate the participation of ag-based biofuels. It's very important that the agriculture sector, farmers, ranchers, etc., all see their place in this policy. And so that's why we're excited about the federal-provincial interaction, because we think we've got some pretty good ideas that have been implemented in Canadian jurisdictions. We've got some less good ideas from foreign jurisdictions that we think we can make a valid case of why those should not be done. And we've got some good regulators in place that want to do good things. So that's why we're positive, optimistic about the future of the sector here.
Absolutely. Very well said. Last question before we go. What are you most looking forward to at our second annual Opus Canadian Carbon and Biofuels Forum in May?
What am I most looking forward to about the Opus conference? Well, this is a sector that is really fun. And I'm putting air quotes around fun because this is a challenging sector. You cover it. You follow the news. This is, if you want to have to follow agriculture, energy, geopolitics, trade, and life cycle analysis, credit markets, commodity arbitrage. I mean, this sector has it all. So it's kind of fun to get everyone together and have the discussions that you can have around the receptions, around the breakfasts, around the breakouts that you can only have in conferences. And people who know the Canadian market have been showing up to this conference. And so you can actually understand a bit more what's going on. We don't have the degree of reporting. We don't have the degree of data that the U.S. regulations have. So you kind of, if you want to know the Canadian market, you actually have to cross the border, come and meet the key players. I think you've got a strong agenda for it. And that's not just because you're putting ABFC in a couple podium spots, but I think you've got some strong participants. And who doesn't like Vancouver in May? It's one of the best cities on the planet. We're going to be in daylight savings with long days, and it's a good venue, and you know, looking forward to getting together with the people who come and the Opus team.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Fred. I'm really looking forward to it too. All right, and I think that wraps it up. I'm looking forward to your insights at our event in May, and to our listeners, thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jordan. See you soon.
I hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.